Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Pete Townsend. Singing about bikers, I guess. You know, I once was a co-producer on The Who's Tommy on Broadway. One of my two forays into Broadway. So I invested this money, and it was a big hit show. I think it took them like 3 years to pay me back.
Really? Why so long?
But I got to meet them, and that was cool.
It was a great show.
It was a pretty good show. It was a pretty good show. I was proud of it. And that one in Guys and Dolls, that was my two Broadway forays, netting me about the same money you would earn in a 1% savings account.
Oh, really? So
it's not a place for rookies. So I finally saw our mayor in person and in town last night. He had returned from his wandering ways, his odyssey crisscrossing the country. On behalf of what he calls the progressive agenda, even President Obama, though, kind of rolled his eyes at the mayor, who was shamed into appearing at a memorial for a person near and dear to me. I'm going to have that report, but not yet. I'll have it a bit later in the program. And the other thing I will get to today is, is this whole thing a scheme to dominate reality television? I mean, the Kardashians, I think that they will do anything to get publicity. Remember Kim Kardashian's, 75-day marriage to the hapless Chris Humphries, the former Brooklyn Nets?
Right. Right.
The whole thing televised, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And then as soon as the show aired to great ratings, Kim's first, I don't know what number, marriage. Her marriage before the current marriage. Anyway, now they are saying that Bruce Jenner has no plans to cut off his wing-wang. And so if he's not going to cut that off, can he really be considered transgender? I mean, I don't know. Do you know?
Yeah, I think, if you're somebody who's transgender, you got to go all the way.
You got to go all the way.
Absolutely.
Otherwise,
new equipment everywhere.
You may be gay or what do they call it? Like a play what? What do we have? Oh, we have that? All right, play it.
I think it would be hard after you do enough stuff. It gets harder and harder to play the other side.
But, like, do you have to just pick a day? Like, this is the day I'm going to just wear this stuff. I'm not going to wear boxers anymore.
I am going to just play it by ear.
Okay. So, like, you don't have a surgery to remove that, and then that means you're the woman.
Remove
your...
Oh, the little thing down there?
Yeah, like, you don't...
That's kind of the last thing you can do. You can do an awful lot before that.
So... Like, are, do you have
because
an appointment to
like,
do that?
No. As of right now, no.
So he has no plans to cut it off.
Right.
I mean,
can you blame him?
I mean, yeah. I couldn't blame him at all, but I can't figure out why they, if they do it, that shows a real commitment. And if the fact is they're not doing it, I mean, I swear to God, the whole thing could be made up. The whole thing could be the most elaborate ratings scheme ever. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that. And don't call me about that because I'm not going to, One more thing. What?
Well, prior to his saying he was not going to cut it off, he did say that he selected a place where he would put it when he would cut it off.
So mean, like what, on his ass?
Well,
what?
He didn't say where, but he has a special spot.
Like on his wrist, like a watch?
Yeah,
on
maybe,
the mantle?
Maybe.
on his forehead.
A slave bracelet, you know.
A slave bracelet. All right, here's where I really want to start, and here's where I am interested in hearing from you all. This has to do with a call I got yesterday that really was a dramatic call, even if we didn't lure back the bikers, the gangsters. And then between the bikers and the cops who were lying in ambush, the 18 cops who were there waiting, some number of heavily armed cops. And as soon as the gunfire broke out, the cops weighed in. And now, you know, you had the 9 bikers killed. 9 killed. I mean, the body count, enormous. 18 others injured. Some of those injuries, very serious. And you have 170 of the bikers now being held on bail of $1 million each. So it's $170 million worth of bail. And they're on charges, all basically murder charges, but they're all linked to a criminal conspiracy. So, if this beef, this is the way I feel about it, same way I felt about when the various, traditional mobsters, the mafia organizations were fighting each other. If they're all fighting each other, I don't care all that much. It's like the Bloods and the Crips in urban America. These are criminal enterprises. And, you know, the white ones and the black ones. They're funded by drug dealing. Mainly, I mean, they also do kidnapping, protection, strong arm collection. They are very ominous in their own way. As you know, I've been up close and personal with more of them than I'd like to remember. They deal everything from heroin to coke to meth and marijuana. And I really don't care very much if they kill each other, but things are never that simple, as you know. And now law enforcement is racing for retaliation, we're told, from bikers coming into the Lone Star State from other states. The cops there are on heightened alert because intelligence indicates that the cops now are being targeted. Why are the cops targeted? Poor cops, they always get targeted. They're being targeted because of the 9 bikers killed on Sunday in that fierce gun battle. It turns out that 4 of the 9 were killed by cops, not by rival bikers. So law enforcement has its hands full, which is interesting. But again, it's not what I want to focus on first this morning. What I do want to focus on first is what we call these bikers. We call them outlaws. I mean, why? When you hear that expression, outlaws, tell me true, or pirates, isn't that kind of a romantic, rebellious, anti-establishment Marlon Brando, the Wild Ones kind of thing?
No doubt. And I think white, by the way, when I think those things.
White, yeah. Right, exactly. That's my point. Why are these obvious documented degenerates deserving of a label like outlaw? I mean, put it another way. And this is, I really want to hear from you, 866 or other. Why do we label these hulking, ominous, violent white criminals differently than we label hulking, ominous, violent black criminals? More specifically, what does a thug look like? If you were listening yesterday, and this is the call I was talking about, a guy who identified himself as a black man, he called in and he broke my chops for not referring to the mass murdering biker gangsters in Waco as thugs. Why didn't I refer to them in Texas there as thugs? So I said almost immediately on the air, I waited a couple of seconds, that the guy was right, the caller was right. If those biker hoodlums were black, is there any doubt that I and many of you would have almost automatically labeled them as thugs? So you have to face it. It is a racial, or at least a racially tinged expression. Thugs. So my question is, isn't it time to either retire the T word, thugs, or be absolutely sure, bend over backward to make sure that the label thug has nothing to do with the race of the perpetrator, that it's not the new N word, this T word. Make sure it has nothing to do with the race of the person being described and everything to do with his or her thuggish behavior. I mean, isn't that the appropriate way to deal with it? So under that definition, thuggish behavior, there is no doubt, and I'll take your calls on that, on thug, but there's no doubt that the rioters who destroyed a huge swath of West Baltimore 2 weeks ago were thugs. There's no doubt. Now, these happened to be black thugs, but they were thugs. They were just as thuggish as those brutal, bloody bikers in Waco. They're all thugs. But the thugs in Baltimore, that begs my main question this morning. I'll take the thugs' calls, but it begs my main question about news that followed the riots in Baltimore, at least the unconfirmed reports out of the riots in Baltimore. And I appreciate that the switch was being lit up right now. But there's more to what I have on my mind. It's not just what you call these thugs. They were thugs in Baltimore. They were thugs in Waco. But the thugs in Baltimore specifically, or at least initially, on my mind, why, if these reports are true, did Jay-Z, the Brooklyn-born billionaire rapper, and his gorgeous, supremely talented wife, Beyonce, why, if these reports are true, and they have not denied them, they've been widespread, why are they putting up bail money for hundreds of people arrested in Baltimore, arrested for attacking cops and burning down their own Baltimore neighborhood? Now, the source of this report, all right, I'll take the first of the calls and then we'll get it. All right, first on thugs. He is Sam in New Jersey. What do you think about Sam?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I was in an all-white elementary school. It was a Jewish school. There was not even one African-American. And the timeout room, like basically where you got sent, if you were in trouble, like they would have a room where you'd have to sit there, like if you got sent to the principal, the headmaster, and it was called the thug room.
The thug room.
It was the thug room.
And what did that conjure in your mind, Sam?
No, that was the room. Like if you bullied a friend or if you bullied
anyone.
There was not a single African-American. I don't think it's associated at all with black people.
You really don't? Do you know,
Layton? I really, truly don't.
You know, I think you make a good argument. I honestly thought about it because we had had this conversation a couple months back when this was also a big story. And I said, because I use it in my copy sometimes when I do news stories.
And when you use it in your copy, is the perpetrator always black? Tell the truth.
I did. I had to think about it. I did. I went back and I looked at my copy from the last couple months and I interchanged it. Sometimes they were black and sometimes they were white. But I've decided if it is that offensive, then maybe I should drop it as well.
All right. So this is there's two things we're talking about today. Number one is thugs, the T word, and whether or not we should permanently drop it from the vocabulary unless we bend over backwards to apply it, in a colorblind way to describe conduct that is offensively, violently criminal. And my second point is, the thugs who happen to be black in Baltimore, why in the world is Jay-Z spending his money to bail them out? For example, I'll give you the example, actually, after this short intermission.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back at 26 minutes after 10 o'clock. I think I'll take the calls on the thug issue now. And then talk more about Jay-Z and what I see as a fundamental flaw in this plan of his, or more broadly, the laser focus on the death of Freddie Gray, the 25-year-old who died in police custody there in Baltimore last month, like Michael Brown, like Earl Gardner here in Staten Island, on the focus just on the victim who passed away tragically in police custody, with no focus whatsoever on the conditions that create, that make ripe the possibility for violence in encounters between police and members of the community, who maybe, you know, the cops don't stop them for no reason. I mean, let's face it. Let's be real. But first, let's focus on thugs before we get to the Jay-Z bailout money. Lots of calls. We'll start. Lou in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, they called 866-Geraldo. Lou, what's on your mind, buddy?
How you doing, Geraldo? In the 90s, growing up in Sunset Park, Brooklyn, it was a predominantly Irish, Puerto Rican, and Dominican neighborhood. Any one of those guys today would say they were thugs. And that's the way it was. I hung out in the street. Of course, you know, I'm doing well for myself now. But growing up, hanging out in the street, there were no black kids in Sunset Park back then. But guess what? The white Irish, the Puerto Rican, and the Dominicans were thugs.
Lou, now, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. What do you think? Do you ever use the expression paddy wagon?
Yes.
And, so and when you Irish think of paddy wagon, up. what do you conjure? Because I got a letter. I got a nasty letter about using the expression paddy wagon last week. What do you think?
Well, because you know what? Predominantly the Irish cops back then were driving the paddy wagon, quote unquote. And I even have Irish friends, and I know Irish cops that say the paddy wagon. And guess what? When I was in Iraq, the name of the vehicle was the paddy wagon. And we had a bunch of guys, oh, you know, you're gonna call, yes, we called it the paddy because we named all our vehicles when I was in Iraq. So, yeah, it's not offensive.
When were you there? With what unit, Lou?
I was with 2nd LAR at Camp Lejeune, Light Armored Reconnaissance.
Did we ever run into each other over there?
Yeah. You were explaining the invasion tactics while I was invading.
All right. Well, thank you for your service, mate. I appreciate it.
And Geraldo, real quick, I'm sorry to take up your time, but Outlaw, yeah, you know what? White bikers use Outlaw because they're the ones that started calling themselves Outlaw.
Well, we started with the Wild Ones, the Outlaw Biker Gang. I think that, I really think, but Lou, what a great call. Thanks. I really believe that there is, Outlaw is way too nice to these guys. I mean, because I think of myself as an outlaw sometimes. And I, you know, Erica always asks me or always says that I was a pirate in a past life. And both those expressions have a benign aspect to them. Thug has no benign aspect to it. And I do think it's racially tinged. And paddy wagon, I'm never going to use that expression again. Because the Irish guy who wrote to me from some organization, I forget the organization, said that it is a pejorative, an ethnic pejorative, that should not be used anymore because it conjures up the era when the Irish were, you know, the lowest on the social economic ladder, and they were the ones who had the encounters with the officers who were often Irish themselves. And, you know, so you won't hear paddy wagon anymore. And if you do hear thugs, believe me, I swear to God, it's going to be an equal opportunity put down to whoever it is that I'm labeling. So I'll get to your calls. Stay right where you are. Be patient. I'm coming to you, 866-Geraldo. I'll come to you. We'll talk about thugs and we'll talk about Jay-Z and where he should have put his money. And the mayor shows up last night.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-Geraldo, 77 WABC.
There ain't nothing. Flying off a porch, and no one slams a door.
A woman scorned 23 years ago today. You remember this one out in Massapequa. Amy Fisher shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco in the face. Amy Fisher, the teen mistress of the Playboy auto mechanic Joey Buttafuoco. Remember the Buttafuocos? 23 years ago. I interviewed Amy in prison, interviewed Mary Jo many times, and of course Joey. Joey challenged me to a boxing match about the time, you know, shortly after I fought Frank Stallone, and I accepted. Would have been fun, but I insisted that all the money go to charity.
Right.
And Joey refused. He desperately needed the money. So he refused to do it for charity. So it never got done. It would have been fun to pummel him. He had his charm, though, I must say. Joey Buttafuoco had his charm. Amy Fisher, tragic. Her life straightened out, and then she became a porn star.
Yeah, she was stripping the last time I think we checked in with her, which wasn't that long ago.
Not too long ago. She became, I know she released some porn videos, and I remember interviewing her at Fox. She said, everybody likes porn. And all the conservative guys are going But 23 years ago, Amy Fisher blasts her way into history. Would we have called Amy Fisher a thug? No, I guess not.
No.
Just a woman scorned, a misguided teen. But she went down heavy. She went down on an attempted murder rap. She spent some heavy time in prison. I don't, and then turned out she seemed very mild-mannered when she got out. Almost, in a way, had all of the sass beat out of her, which, it you know, kind of, well, whatever it was. But she was the woman scorned, and I wonder, the Buttafuocos, I don't know what happened to the Buttafuocos. I think
the wife got remarried.
Did she? All right, well, you can look it up. We're talking about thugs, and I think thugs have been, I think my caller yesterday was, and if that person is listening, they can recall. I mean, it really ignited some thoughts in me. I think thugs should be, and I'll get to your calls momentarily, thugs, the word thugs should relate to thuggery and not to the race or the perp, and I think that, unfortunately, the caller was correct, that it has now a very heavy racial connotation that it should not, and we'll be darn sure, because it's a good word, to use it in an equal opportunity way. We'll go with your calls now. 866 Geraldo. Bill is first up from White Plains. Hey, buddy, what's on your mind?
How you doing? It's Whitestone, Geraldo. How are you?
Whitestone, okay, buddy.
Okay, I spoke to you a few weeks ago, and I called about the same thing. How I'm not, and I'm so proud of you that you're not going to give up or let up on the word thug, because a thug is a thug. It doesn't matter what color it is. And after I called you and spoke to you about that, 3 days later, two more cops were killed in Mississippi. And guess who they were killed by?
Thugs.
Two thugs.
Four thugs.
Four, right. The girlfriend and then the other brother. Okay? So anybody who wants to stop using that word has got some damn nerve. And the people out there, and I don't care what color they are, they better realize.
What about those bikers, Bill?
They're thugs, too.
All right. As long as they're thugs.
Certainly thugs. I don't have to just know it's a biker to know it's a thug. If I see a person and I see what he looks like, you get a pretty good idea. But when they do something like that, you know for sure.
These hulking brutes of a criminal or thugs in Massapequa. Rob, rather, on the line. Hey, Rob.
Geraldo. You got to stop the madness with trying to eliminate words from our vocabulary.
I'm including them. I just want to, erase the racial connotation.
It's a great word, thug. Until you started bringing it up. I never heard anyone, only until recently, say, oh, that must be, you're talking about a black
person. Yeah, you got to be honest with yourself. You got to look at your own use.
Honest. I never heard anybody.
I know the defense. I defended myself. Then finally I said, they're right. I mean, I definitely get it, and I understand why people are very sensitive to it.
A couple of years ago, remember the big drama about the jackbooted thugs? And what did you think of
that? That is true. I thought of Nazis when I think of jackbooted thugs.
And I don't believe they were black. I think they were pretty much all white.
But you got a point there, Rob. That's a good one. All right, jackbooted thugs. I remember that was totally white hate mongerish thing. Here's John in New York City. What's up, John? What are you thinking about?
How are you, sir? Yes, I want to comment on the thug issue.
Go ahead.
First, I want to ask you, do you have any compunction against using the word gyp, as in I was gypped on the price of this item?
I do now. Yeah, I do. I've become sensitive to those things because like paddy wagon. I get it. I get it. And I get the sensitivity. And I want to move on. I remember I said on one of my programs, and I really said this, honest engine to someone who is making a point that I thought was probably unbelievable, but if true, was startling. So I said, honest engine, which is an expression I used as a kid growing up in Williamsburg and West Babylon.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
Please. I mean, my phone's blasted out because it was so politically incorrect that, I mean, why hurt people's feelings? It's when it's easy to substitute one word for another. You know what I mean, John?
But, Geraldo, I mean, how far are we going to go on political correctness and trying to ease everybody's slightest, sense of being insulted? You know, just because you offend somebody, does that make it wrong? I mean,
that's a good point. I mean, I don't mind offending jerks, but I mind offending like straight regular folks, and I certainly don't want their children to think that I'm putting down the race or religion or ethnicity that they happen to represent. And
You could make yourself crazy.
Nah, it's not that tough. It ain't that tough. Believe me. Thanks for the call. Here's Ron in Brooklyn. What are you thinking about, Ron? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo.
Yeah, I'm thinking that you've got a category error going on. Very complicated. We're calling them bikers because they
ride Harleys.
Huh?
They ride bikes.
Well, no, you're also insinuating that they are gang.
Well, they are a gang. The Bandidos are a criminal enterprise. The federal government has so labeled them. That's a fact. So the Cossacks. You know, I covered the Hells Angels on East 3rd Street. I haven't even started regaling you with my tales of Sandy Alexander and the Hells Angels and how I accidentally knocked one of their bikes over once. I've had some tales to tell about the Hells Angels. When I ran into Jerry Garcia, why don't you find that soundbite? When I ran into Jerry Garcia about the Hells Angels, he was the Grateful Dead and the Hells Angels were very close at one point.
Okay, so we already assume that they're bad guys. Okay, whereas with the guys who are rioting, what else are we going to call them if we don't call them thugs?
Well, you know, you call them a rioter, you call them a vandal, an anarchist, I can think of a lot of things to call them, but they were thugs. I mean, that's my point. They were acting in a thuggish way, so I don't mind calling them thugs as long as I apply it in an equal opportunity way to those hulking white brutes who 9 of them died in one of the most extraordinary, thanks for the call, Ron, gunfights in recent history. Can you imagine 9 dead in a gunfight outside a Hooters kind of establishment where they're having a summit? Imagine having a motorcycle summit where all these biker gangs come from all over the state to discuss what? You know they weren't talking about like having mutual respect, quote unquote. They were talking about who has which territory, right, to deal meth, to deal heroin, to deal cocaine. All right, you're in Waco, I'm in this, I'm in Abilene, you're in Dallas. I mean, that's what the summit, so-called, was about. It was like in The Godfather when the families got together and they decided who did what the rules were and how they divided up the drug traffic. That's what the Bloods and Crips are. They are the modern-day incarnation of that. And I can go through the other ethnicities and their organized criminal activity as well. I just want to make sure that there's a level playing field, that we don't romanticize someone because he's on a damn motorcycle and Marlon Brando 65 years ago did a movie about them. I mean, I am infuriated when I see the glamorization of these thug groups, black or white. Really, I think that it's a dead end. It's a dead end, and it gives exactly the wrong message to young people. Makes them aspire to be that thuggish person who gets respect, quote unquote. I mean, respect. That's what 9 people died for, respect on Sunday. I mean, the guys that were confronting me in Baltimore, they were demanding respect. They were demanding respect for me after they had burned their neighborhood, after they had, burned innocent people out of their senior citizen center, after they burned down their drugstore. They wanted respect. Respect.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Couple of seconds left before the news break. Let me go to our buddy Paul in Queens. What's up, man?
Hey, listen, Geraldo, I visited Camden. Camden's burnt-out houses with SUVs and $5,000 gold-rimmed thing with drug dealers. The president right now is illiterate now because, you know what? If he didn't go and knock on doors...
The president is illiterate, did you say?
Yes. You know why? Because he's not smart.
Isn't he a Harvard, Columbia grad?
On doors, and let me ask you a question. 6 years ago, he had an agent in the Palatano. She was in charge of giving this stuff to
I'm going to talk about President Obama visiting with the cops in Camden after this.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
6 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back on this Tuesday. What is this? The 19th?
You got it. Today?
Tuesday, May 19th. May 19th. We have spring. This is my favorite time of year, although Bill Evans said the sun is breaking through. Maybe it's breaking through uptown at ABC television, but the Empire State crown still shrouded in low clouds here at 33rd Street, high above Madison Square Garden. The cops in Waco are about to give a briefing on the update on the latest of that extraordinary shootout between bikers initially and then between bikers and cops. Nine of the bikers, the thug outlaw bikers, killed, nine dead. It is an extraordinary amount. Now cops are fearful because it turns out of the nine dead bikers, four were killed by cops, not by their rival biker gangsters. So the fear that police have now is that bikers from around the country will be converging on Waco to shoot out cops. The chief is speaking, and let's listen for a minute.
To get those final results, will we tell you how many we shot and how many were possibly deceased by police rounds? Without a doubt, we will. You will know that when we know that. The information that is out there right now, if you got lucky and guessed that number, congratulations. If you didn't, shame on you for putting that information out there that may have been incorrect.
What's he saying? He's saying that they may or may not be correct that four of the nine are dead by police fire?
The release of names is not being done yet until we are able to notify next of kin. We're having issues doing that.
Yeah, he's kind of off the microphone. He's basking in his moment.
We have
he's got his hands on his hip. The chief does, and he's kind of.
To find out who's killed.
This is Sergeant Barry Swanton.
Until we know that we have made a specific contact with each of the individual deceased, we will not release those names. That should be coming pretty quickly. We are working feverishly to get those families notified. I said very early on, we believe that this was a criminal event that occurred here. However, those that are injured and deceased are human beings, and we will treat them with the utmost respect that we can.
All right, we'll dip into that, dip in and out of it.
Jailed, killed, or injured were not from the Waco area. We know that is a fact. Many of them were not from the local Waco community. There is a wide list of where they are from. Once we get that information, we will share that with you and let you know where they are from. We won't guess on facts. We will tell you specific facts that are knowledge to us. Of those that were injured, of the 18 that went to hospitals, seven remain in our local area hospitals. All are stable, and most are improving. I will tell you, as a law enforcement officer, if something happens to me in the line of duty, I am glad I live in Waco, Texas. Our hospital staff has been commendable.
All right, he's extolling the virtue of the doctors and nurses caring for the outlaw bikers, the outlaw biker thugs. We'll go back. I am interested in what information they may have or may not have on this conspiracy of bikers nationwide to converge on that corner of Texas. Waco, wasn't the Branch Davidians.
Right.
Wasn't that in Waco?
Right. That was during when Janet Reno was the attorney general.
And they came in with armored vehicles?
Yeah, lots of people killed.
Lots of people died there in little Waco. I remember going to Waco on one of my first 2020 stories having to do with jackrabbits. They were trapping jackrabbits and then using the jackrabbits to train greyhound racing dogs. They'd use the real jackrabbit. They'd let the jackrabbit free in a contained area, a circular track. The greyhounds would catch them and eat them. And then in the race themselves, they don't use, obviously, a real jackrabbit. They use the, you know, little, you know, fake jackrabbit.
Mechanical one, yeah.
Mechanical jackrabbit. But I remember how absolutely freaked out the Humane Society and the various animal rights groups were by the practice that we revealed there. But I was also mocked by many commentators. Why was I wasting my time worrying about jackrabbits? They may have had a point there. But Waco is, you know, it's certainly had its share of notoriety and violence. But the thing that I am focusing on, and I do want to get very much to that speech last night by the mayor at the event, where he showed up, and I was glad to see him, and this purported generosity, misplaced generosity by Jay-Z, with or without his gorgeous and talented wife, Beyonce, to bail out the Baltimore rioters. But let me take some calls about the use of the thug word first. Here is Stan in Forest Hills. What's up, man?
Hey, 1968, the Democratic National Convention. I think Marty may have the audio. Dan Rather is on the floor there in Chicago. There's rioting going on.
The Democratic Convention, Chicago, 1968,
and
right?
And Rather is pushed around by some of Mayor Daley's people. Cronkite comes on and says to them, "Hey, Dan, it seems we got a bunch of thugs here." There is the preservative for the use
right,
of the word.
Wait, Stan, we do have it. Let's play
what
that
happened
one.
Is a Georgia delegate, at least he had a Georgia delegate sign on, was being hauled out of the hall. We tried to talk to him to see why, who he was, and what the situation was. And at that instant, the security people, well, as you can see, put me on the deck. I didn't do very well.
I think we've got a bunch of thugs here.
there they are. All right. That's when it
was. That's the word thug, meaning guys that are ruffian tough in such a way as they were.
I don't think ruffian toughy as much as bullying and oppressive. But
right.
Thanks you for the research, Stan. I appreciate it. Our viewers our listeners are so hip. Here's Paul in Queens. What's up, man? Did we finish?
I was going to say, let me change that word. Not an illiterate, elitist. Elitist is what he is because he stopped all day.
Who is elitist?
The president.
Oh, the president is an elitist. He's not illiterate, so you're withdrawing your charge, your previous charge.
I'm saying elitist, just like the rest of these guys are, these politicians. Because you know what? He brought 30 people who are friends of the Democrats to have this one little meeting. People in Camden are weed off on him because he didn't show up to the regular doors. And that's the reason why. And he wanted to talk about the police, bayonets. Jen Napolitano was his the Homeland Security chief giving out this stuff to the police. What did he do with Jennifer Napolitano for 6 years? What was she doing? Did they have any meetings? Did they ever talk about what they're giving to the police?
Janet Napolitano, when did she leave office? She left office quite a while.
I think she left when he
was there for a while.
Second term.
This guy is still in charge, new guy. So doesn't he know what they're giving away?
All right. They definitely knew. Hold it. They definitely knew what they were giving away. They were giving it away because they were getting write-offs internally. So if the federal government is stuck with an extra tank they don't know what to do with, they can get it off their books by giving it to the cops, and then it takes the form of aid, federal aid to that municipality. It's a scam. It's a scam that the weapons manufacturers love, and it is absolutely inappropriate. It is the position of this program that we should have tasers, not tanks. And there are very few situations in which law enforcement needs armored vehicles. I mean, let's face it. They love playing soldier, but they were inappropriate for dealing with the situation. They certainly exacerbated the situation in Ferguson. I'm not in any way forgiving what the thugs of the streets of Ferguson did to that community. But there's no doubt but that the police presence and that untrained, you know, segregated police force in Ferguson using tanks, armored personnel carriers, and all the rest of it certainly did not help the situation and led ultimately to the federal government going in. And although the officer in Ferguson was obviously cleared in Michael Brown's death, what happened to the community as a result and what was revealed of how the people there have been oppressed by the occupying force there has been made clear. I don't think there's any debate about it. And not anymore. I mean, Ferguson was a mess. You know, a white police force of an all-black town, essentially, was a mess. Unlike Baltimore, where half the cops, the six cops arrested, three of them were black. Black police commissioner, black mayor, black prosecutor, black state Senate majority leader based there, black congressman. You know, the situation in Baltimore, I mean, to describe it in strictly racial terms is ridiculous. Ferguson was a different story. Here's Jan in New York. Thanks for calling, Jan. What's up?
Good morning.
Hi.
So it's very simple about thug. The word is about 200 years old, and it always has been associated with street crime and violent crime. So it has nothing to do with what a person looks like. It's what they do and where they do it. So if a skinny white girl engages in violent street crime, she's engaging in thug behavior and should be called a thug. But if a big fat guy on a bike interferes with traffic on the highway, that's not violent street crime and he shouldn't be called a thug. So one last point.
You are so charming, Jan.
Thank you. So you can't have a situation where the fact that at this moment in time, most of the people who are engaging in violent street crime are young black men, that doesn't make the word thug a racist word. For the same reason that if most of the people engaging in riots at the moment are young black people, that doesn't make rioter a racial term. You just shouldn't use words that belong to a race, like Jip and Patty and those words.
So what about the bikers in Texas? Were they thugs under your definition, Jan?
Until they engage in a violent crime.
Well, they were killing each other.
That's when they became thugs. But when they were just on their bikes looking like big hulking guys, they were just unattractive bikers.
As I said, you are so charming. You have such a sweet voice, and I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. 18 minutes after 11 o'clock, let me take a short intermission. So much to talk about. So much ground left uncovered here on 77 WABC.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
And they are helping with everything that we can. I will tell you that our McLennan County District Attorney was here on scene Sunday afternoon as well, and Mr. Reyna is being kept apprised of every event that has gone on and everything that we
As
are
you
doing.
Can imagine, there are some major forces now circling the situation in Waco, Texas, where the nine bikers were killed by either other bikers or by the cops. Now it's appearing that this is Sergeant Patrick Swanton, the spokesman for the Waco police force. He just announced that the Texas Rangers, among other agencies, are investigating. 18 cops. They're saying at least four of the nine were killed by cops. That number may change. Swanton indicated that number was not a hard number. But wouldn't it be interesting if the feds came in and found that the civil rights of the bikers were violated by excessive use of force? Wouldn't that be fascinating? What if all of these bikers were killed by the cops?
It's a possibility.
The bikers as victims, that's not going to happen. They confiscated 100 weapons, and it's pretty clear that it started with the battle between the bandidos and the Cossacks in the men's room. What are you doing here? You weren't invited. What are you looking at? I've had so many of those over the years. So let me take your questions. I've got to. There's so much ground to cover. I'll do one more round of calls on the thug and on Jay-Z. giving that money. I just want to say this about Jay-Z. Jay-Z, the billionaire, rapper, Brooklyn-born, married to one of the most fabulous women on earth, Beyonce. The reports that are so far undenied but unconfirmed, as far as I can tell, indicate that Jay-Z has been paying the bail for the rioters of Baltimore, the thugs of Baltimore who destroyed their community. And what I tweeted out yesterday that caused that got a lot of attention was, why is he spending his money on people who were not only guilty of criminal activity but participated in the suicide of West Baltimore, destroying homes of local residents, local businesses, really setting that community that was already on its heels back even further? Why didn't he take that same money? And this is my bottom line on this. I've been trying to get to for a half hour. My bottom line is, if Jay-Z wanted to help out West Baltimore, then why not do something like rebuild the burned out CVS drugstore? If he wanted to do something for the people of West Baltimore, why not rebuild the burned out senior center in the West Baltimore area, there, the neighborhood? Why not adopt a block of those burned out, derelict buildings? Same money. You want to spend your money. You made all this money, a lot of it extolling the virtue of the conduct that I find reprehensible, violence and so forth. In the way the, who's the hip hop kid, the father just got killed in Brooklyn, you've been reporting all morning?
Chinks is his name. That's what he goes by on the street.
All right. Killed.
Lionel Pickens is his name.
Donald Pickens. Killed by, shot up.
Yeah, somebody just drove up right next to him after he had finished a concert and shot into his car. It was in Queens.
In Queens. All right. So this whole hip hop aura is setting people back in such a big way. Dave's on the line from New Jersey. What's on your mind there, Dave?
Yes, Geraldo, good morning. I am so happy that you are addressing this issue. This has been frustrating to me for so many years, that these hip-hop moguls, whether it's Jay-Z, Russell Simmons, Suge Knight, that whole bunch, instead of doing something to uplift the black community in the inner cities, they continue to pour money and time into thuggery and savage behavior. And somebody once asked Russ Simmons, you know, about why there's so much gangsterism in hip-hop, and the demagogue that he is, he did a rope-a-dope dance and said, well, what about the gangsterism of George W. Bush sending our troops to Iraq? You know, so they clearly, when they don't want to deal with the issue, they deflate the question.
Gotta leave you there, Dave.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
33 minutes after 11 o'clock, we have a special guest coming up. I just want to give you this bit of information that I think is very, very interesting. You have a situation where in Baltimore, there was another couple of murders in the last 24 hours. Listen to this. There have been, this month, in Baltimore, a city of 600,000 people, 35 murders this month, 96 murders this year in Baltimore. So 96 murders in Baltimore, a city of 600,000. We've had 109 here in New York. That's very alarming. We've had 109 murders here in New York, a city of 8.4 million. So 109 murders in a city of 8.4 million, a city that is 10 times the size of Baltimore. Baltimore, it can be said, has a murder rate 10 times that of New York City. Now, what's happened in Baltimore? Why the dramatic increase in Baltimore? They are saying that the cops now are hesitant to crack down in light of the arrests following the death of Freddie Gray, the 25-year-old ex-con in custody. So now the cops are backing off. Murder is flourishing in Baltimore. The thugs are roaming free, it seems to me, in Baltimore to commit heinous crimes. But can you imagine in a city of 600, imagine a murder rate 10 times that of New York City? I mean, that's what you have. God forbid our cops back off because of the abolition of stop and frisk and all the anti-police news or commentary that has been out there. Our murder rate, 109 murders to date, is up 10% from a year ago. That's bad. That's awful. And is that related to, you know, all of these various controversies involving, you know, excessive use of force in all the demonstrations and protests and for following Akai Gurley and Earl Garner, etc.? But here, and you have all this violence against cops now. So we're up 10% in homicides, up to 109 as of yesterday. But Baltimore has 96, and it is a city one-tenth, less than one-tenth. What is 600,000? What percentage of 8.4 million is that? Do the math.
But, you know, worse than that is that I imagine most of those murders have taken place in a very small section of the city.
Right.
So it's that.
You mean in Baltimore?
Yeah. If you look
at here,
West Baltimore, it's probably most of those murders are right in that neighborhood.
Right there. Yeah. Right there. Just, okay. So the other murder that we are noting today, not murder, attempted murder, that happened on the front pages 23 years ago when Amy Fisher shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco in the face, the Long Island Lolita. Amy Fisher went to jail after almost killing Joey Buttafuoco's wife, Mary Jo. So they did a movie, The Long Island Lolita. Remember that?
I do.
One of the most handsome men in television and movies played Joey Buttafuoco. I thought he was really... I think Joey Buttafuoco did okay with this casting. Jack Scalia, the actor, he joins us right now. Jack, how you doing?
I'm doing terrific, Geraldo. How about yourself?
So what are you into? I hear you're helping out the veterans. Is that your
right,
main?
Yes. Yeah, I'm in right now. Thank you for asking. I'm an ambassador with the Coalition to Salute America's Heroes, and that's those are our guys and gals coming back from the war on terror and trying to make their lives better and have them facilitate and get back into society as smoothly as possible.
Well, I think that's noble effort, and I think you're going to have more work on your hands with the fall of Ramadi in Iraq and a lot of the people saying that we have to put boots on the ground, back in the ground in Iraq. I think we'd have more soldiers bleeding for their nation. But Jack Scalia is my guest. He played Joey Buttafuoco in the TV movie Long Island Lolita. How was that? Were you typecast as a Joey Buttafuoco after that?
No, I don't think so, because I put 38 pounds off of that role, and they kinked my hair, and I had nose implants put inside of my nose, and I was wearing brown contacts, and then a month later, I wound up losing all that weight and started a movie, Torch Song, with Raquel Welch. So, no, I wasn't cast as Joey Buttafuoco, a typecast anyway. You could ask Eddie Marinaro and Tony Dennison the same question, but they also played Joey.
They played Joey in different movies. Amazing how that,
exactly.
You know, it's hard to remember how it dominated the pop culture scene. You also are not All My Children. That was a great show.
I had a lot of fun doing that. I worked with great people, of course, the incomparable, the incredibly talented Susan Lucci. That was she's a wonderful, wonderful actress. And after having worked with so many other actresses, from Raquel to Bo Derek to Farrah Fawcett, God rest her soul, and Melanie Griffith and Dana Delaney, or all these women, and Susan's right up there with them.
So Jack, what do you think of the state of the city now with a liberal mayor?
Well, I think the question would be better asked to our police force.
Do you think the cops?
Whether he's a Republican or a Democrat or a liberal, whatever he is, whoever they are, I mean, Mayor Giuliani is the one who set the standard and how to work with our men and women in law enforcement, also with the FDNY. He set the standard, and that's what everybody should go to. Bloomberg did a really good job coming up to that standard. And, you know, from what I see and from what I read and, you know, having my family is four generations of NYPD in my family. And I have a nephew who's a corrections officer right now. And I, you know, from having that exposure in my life and how men and women wear the blue in our, you know, in our city, in New York, I mean, he's not doing right by them.
You don't think Mayor de Blasio is doing right by the cops?
No, not right now. I mean,
all right, I got you. Yeah. I mean, I
would ask the rank and file.
Yeah, a lot of them, I think, share your sentiment, but they do their job and they risk everything to keep
us
safe. So, how do people help vets through your organization, Jack Scalia? Well, I guess.
Thank you, Geraldo. They can go to saluteheroes.org, and that's our website. And we're unique in a way. We get back 75% of what we bring in goes directly out to the disabled vets. 75% of the workforce at saluteheroes.org are combat wounded vets. And we're giving out like $25,000 per week in emergency relief. And that's kind of what our forte is. We get the money out to the vets that want to keep the lights on, keep the water running, get their house payments made, get their car payments made.
Give the address one more time, Jack.
Saluteheroes.org. And they can go to that. And then, I'm doing a radio show for them. And that's on the Military Appreciation Channel. And we get some great guests. And I'd love to have you on the show.
Anytime, Jack. Just let me know.
Yeah, but thank you. And we've had on, Colonel Alan West. We've had on Congressman Ryan Zinke, who was a former Navy SEAL. Raquel Welch just did it recently. Jay Leno.
I ran into her. I still was in awe of her. She looks fabulous. So sexy.
Yeah, unbelievable. And she's one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. She's such a terrific lady.
She was very charming. I expected her to be a diva, but she was very, very charming.
Nah, you're right. She's so down to earth. And you find a lot of people in our business after they've been around and they've got their, they've been around for a while and have had, experience. We all go through our moments where we kind of gets a little heady for us.
Yeah.
And then we come back to reality.
I definitely feel more at peace with my skin than ever. I tell you that much. Jack, I got to let you go. I'm up against a hard break here, but I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'd love to have you on the Coalition to Salute America.
Okay, let Marty know. I'll come on anytime.
We'll do it. Take care.
All right, thanks, Jack. All right, thanks, buddy.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
So I finally saw our mayor in person last night. He was in town. I welcomed him back to town, actually. I followed him up on the podium. So I didn't actually get to meet him. I just was in the front row watching him. But it was interesting to see him. He had just returned from his national travels on behalf of what he calls the progressive agenda. Minimum wage, which I support, but other things that a lot of other progressive so-called in the nation support. So I think his whole trip was kind of a ego stroking, but that's just me. And I think that one of the reasons he appeared, it was a memorial for Herman Badillo at Hunter College. Herman, a dear friend and role model for me. And it was a man who really changed the face of the city in many ways. He was a big hero, the first Puerto Rican everything. He was the first borough president. He was the first congressman, first deputy mayor, ran for mayor many times. He was someone who was so important to me. When I came back to New York after the University of Arizona, I didn't know what I was going to do. My dad told me about Herman Badillo, who had gone to Brooklyn College, graduated first in his class, even though he went to school at night, law school at night. He came here as a foster child, an orphan, couldn't speak a word of English at the age of 12, ultimately became everything that I just said, the George Washington, really, of the Puerto Rican community. And his funeral, the mayor was conspicuously absent, much to the chagrin of his lovely Herman's lovely, wonderful widow, Gail. So I loved Herman for all those reasons. He also, had Jewish Puerto Rican children. So he kind of started the whole Puerto Rican ethnic group that I'm a proud member of. There are only, handful of us. So it was wonderful to be there. The main thing he did that I want to talk about, open admissions really destroyed the city university. This is a topic that we can talk about at much greater length at a different time. It really did. Anyone could get into any one of the city colleges, including City College itself, which used to be, in my day, referred to as the Harvard of the poor. Because poor, many immigrant children went to City College, ultimately became great, judges and authors and so forth. Open admissions really brought all the city colleges down to the same level, the lowest level, really, and it was all an effort to integrate the schools. It went disastrously wrong, Herman reinstituted standards and testing when he was on the board of the City University. He saved City College, and he got attacked. And the reason I relate to him so much, maybe I'll talk about this tomorrow, is he got attacked by some of the same people who attacked me. You know, why you used to be liberal, you used to defend these people unequivocally. Why do you equivocate now? I do the right thing as Herman did the right thing. I'll talk more about this tomorrow.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.